All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Thank you for joining us. I think we are live. I think everything is good to go. Looks like it's green as opposed to red, which is a good sign. One of the reasons I say that is because I'm coming to you through light speed today. We actually finally got fiber optics hooked up here in the studio, so hopefully everything goes well. So that's exciting. That's something good. Amazing speed up, by the way. Full duplex and everything. So that's pretty great. So hopefully that goes well. But otherwise, yeah, guys, hope you're doing fine. Hope you have a wonderful, well, afternoon or late evening, depending on where you are. Hope you enjoyed the show that we did with David Icke yesterday. That was fun, of course, having David Icke back on the show. It was a while ago, 5 years, I think it was, since I spoke to him last. And of course, we've been very much on the nationalist trail. And we kind of have a little bit of a divergent path there for a little bit, which is good. Which is, of course, I don't agree with David Icke on everything, obviously not. But you don't have to do that to talk to people. I think he's done very good work actually on the COVID-19 issues, especially with when it comes to the grid that they're rolling out and stuff like that too. But also kind of investigating some of the deeper questions. Check it out if you missed it. Anyway, it's there up on redicemembers.com right now, and of course on Red Ice TV as well. Here's actually the censored article that we put up about that too. But yeah, it's up on Red Ice TV. So check that out. Good stuff right there. It is embedded and everything. So check that out. All right. What else? A couple other things. I don't know if there's something else I want to go through here before we kick off, ladies and gentlemen. A lot of things lined up today. Do want to talk today about the origins of the lockdown idea. It's actually pretty interesting when you get into it. A 14-year-old high schooler is actually behind the lockdown idea. We'll talk about that article. A bunch of other stuff, too, lined up for you guys as well. Let me do a couple of these DLive things here real quick because I see some stuff have come in. I appreciate that. Very nice of you guys joining us. We have, what do we have? 400 people are on DLive right now, which is good. Not sure what we have on Twitter and VK and the website and the Entropy feed, by the way. I should start that up. I'll do that here. Shortly. I did forget that. That's a couple of ways, of course, if you want to join in the Entropy stream. But of course, DLive is a good way to do super chats there too, diamonds and stuff like that. Anyway, let me do a couple of these real quick. Proud and Frank Denier sends a diamond. Thank you. A forbidden hand gesture in a certain angle. I think it's 45 degrees. Thank you for that. Mr. Wright sends 1, 2, 3 diamonds and a Ninjagini. Thank you so much, Mr. Wright. I appreciate it. Never any messages. Do you? Is it always just... I appreciate it. Don't get me wrong. I'm just thinking of if you do a super chat with it. Usually you don't. Anyway, I appreciate it very much. Thank you, Mr. Wright. Seemed like a cool guy. Thank you for the support. Psylosopher, a diamond. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. And thank you to you guys who are handing out subs over there as well. Mr. Noseberg, I see, is heavily involved in handing out the one-month subscriptions over there. Thank you for that. Mr. Noseberg, I appreciate it very much. Spencer the First sends a diamond and says, I was hoping to become a lizard hunting expert. Yeah, Spencer the First sent a lizard yesterday. We actually live streamed the show with David Icke to DLive yesterday. We pre-recorded it and then we streamed it live. And Spencer left a diamond and he wanted to have some insight regarding lizards, I think, regarding David Icke. But unfortunately, we couldn't do that. I couldn't deliver that diamond because it was pre-recorded. So I'll have to return to you about that in regards to... I'm not particularly an expert on hunting lizards. Although you could potentially actually ask Maria Farmer. Did you guys see this? The FBI diagram? I was going to say artist, but she is an artist. And, you know, Icke, he talks about, you know, lizard people and, you know, that kind of stuff, right? And is being made fun of a lot, you know, for that and stuff. And you know, I can understand that or whatever, right? But Maria Farmer is interesting. Her depiction here, she was roped into the Jeffrey Epstein sex slave ring, right? She was being trafficked to all these high rollers and global elites, you know, from Dershowitz to Les Wexner to Epstein himself, of course, many others. She depicted, what's her name again? Ghislaine Maxwell, right in the center there, as a lizard, believe it or not. Maybe that's what we're talking about. We're talking about lizard people, right? Well, there's two ways you can look at it. It's the lizards, and then it's the lizard people, right? I think she's eating a, correct me if I'm wrong, is she eating a, that's the wrong angle right there. What are you doing? There we go. She's eating a baby or something? There's like blood and a pair of legs, it looks like. I don't know. Anyway, there's some interesting stuff in this. I tweeted it out. Dershowitz, coincidentally, right down here. He has no pants on. He's standing under a tree with, what was it? Poisoned apples, I think they said, right? Shushing victims and stuff. Les Wexner is depicted in there, too. It's kind of funny. Even Epstein is up in a flying saucer up there to the top right. So there's some decoding you can do in this in this image to see what kind of adventures a Jeffrey Epstein sex slave has been part of. All right. Anyway, that was a strange detour. I didn't even expect to do that. I had this one later on, but, you know, it was a good time to jump in there. Thank you, Spencer the First. I appreciate that. Lord Aragon 2019. Sensei Diamond, love the nice soft t-shirt, Lana. Thanks, Red Ice. Well, thank you for ordering. Appreciate that. Yeah, I think we have some of the best t-shirt in the whole, definitely in this whole field, right? But they're top-notch. Don't get me wrong. It's definitely worth the price. Lanaslama.com. Check it out. Red Ice Prints. Thank you, Lord Aragon. Appreciate that. Techno Viking, a diamond. Thank you. And Mary Arian, a diamond, and says, thank you for not bleeping out the first swear on Weekend Warrior. I usually don't. Was there one there? Maybe there was. Anyway, you would know. Maybe you watched it more recently than I did. I've already forgotten about that. Well, you're welcome, and thank you. Proud M. Frank Denier, a diamond. No message, and stuff like that. Sends a diamond, great Ike show, and stuff like that. Well, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Thank you. Mr. White Tuber sends a diamond. Check him out over here on DLive. Haven't been able to catch too many DLives or too many live streams by him on DLive, but I do see him go live. I checked in on a couple. Check it out. Seems like an interesting channel. Proud M. Frank Denier sends a diamond. David Icke is a great guest. Thanks. Well, appreciate that. Thank you. KP77 sends a diamond. Keep up the good work, guys. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. Okay. I saw also that I had missed actually a couple of, and it was my bad, a couple of donor box right at the end of, must have been last Flashback Friday. I do apologize for that. I think it was Double Dog who sent a $10 donation. Just want to do those real quick. And he says, did I do that? Maybe the, I think it was Double Dog. I think this one came in late. Anyway, hopefully the internet quits throttling Red Ice before Henrik gets PTSD from trolling super chats. Trolley super chats. Hey, Henrik, what do you call a potato who's a total jerk? You call him a dictator. I think I didn't do that one. Maybe I did. Anyway, Glenn the Chinaman sent $30 too and says, freedom shekels. Thank you, Glenn. Not sure if you're watching this or not, but I do appreciate it. Last Friday, my apologies again for missing that. Cody W. sends a $5 donation as well. Love you guys. Looking forward to unfiltered videos to come. Seriously, can't wait. Sorry I can't donate more, but plan on joining Red Eye soon. Until then, a monthly donation. He gives us accepting phone calls. Got me there. Well, thank you, Cody. I appreciate that. And we're going to do some more call-ins, by the way, too. Thank you, Cody. A couple of other ones came in. I appreciate all those. No messages attached from Craig and also from David. Thank you, guys. And Double Dog again sent one. That's actually from today, a little bit earlier, looks like. He says, wonderful to see you, David. Bill Gates can give me a vaccine out of my cold, dead hands. Sign up for that. I definitely understand that. Thank you, Double Dog, for that. Just wanted to clear that off because I didn't want to, you know, kind of that you think I was missing those or neglecting those. I'll start the Entropy stream here in a little bit while we're checking a video. In the meantime, dline.tv/redeyestv or donorbox.org/red-eyes. But yeah, let's dive into some of these topics. Otherwise, we'll be here all evening. Don't want to do that. Always pull in too many sources, too many videos, too many articles to talk about, and it always goes longer than I want to. So anyway, quick story up to here on Twitter. Of course, they're going full safe zone, I guess you could call it, right? Twitter used to be such a great place because there was a way to reach politicians, celebrities, people in positions of influence and power and stuff like that, people in media, journalists and stuff. But now they're beginning to... It was fun while it lasted, but obviously that wouldn't be the case, right? So here's a new way where Twitter is saying here, a new way to have a conversation with exactly who you want, right? So unwanted people... You cannot deport them out of your Twitter feed. Now, see, now it's okay to have borders. Now it's okay to have restrictions. Now it's okay to get rid of the undesirables, right? It says, we're starting with a small percent globally, so keep your eye out to see it in action. Here's the video that Twitter released with this. Here. Ugh, bad music. So I'm gonna do this. You can see that properly. Who can reply? Right, there it is. Who can reply? Choose who can reply to this tweet. Anyone mentioned can always reply. Everyone, or people you follow, or only people you mention. Cowards! Cowards! Yeah, because, you know, when you ask someone what kind of pasta should people try making fresh at home, you know you don't want those Pizzagate comments coming in under your feed, right? So you got to make sure that it's controlled, right? When Obama is asking, you know, hey, we shipped in $40,000 worth of hot dogs from Chicago or pizza, whatever, you know, pasta, pizza, these kinds of things. Right? That's why they're using that as an example here on Twitter.com. This music. All right, very gay. All right, I have nothing else to say about it. Moving on. Bullshit. Britain First leader Paul Golding, convicted under terrorism law. I haven't followed these guys too much. Britain First. Lonnot spoke with Jada Franson. It was it's got to be over a year and a half ago, I think. Seems all right. I know there's some people that have critiques of these people. Whatever, they do what they do. This is just crazy, though. Far-right figure refused police access to his phone, and they leaving out half of that, and his iBook, I think it was, at Heathrow Airport as he returned from Moscow, right? So you kind of got this... You have this in the media, right? The far-right is funded by Russia, blah, blah, blah. Now it's only Marxist, I think, the neo-Marxist that goes down that route of potentiality getting fed from Russia, but whatever. The leader of the far-right political group Britain First has been found guilty of an offense under the Terrorism Act of refusing to give police access to his mobile phone on his return from a political trip to Russia. Paul Golding, 38, was stopped at Heathrow Airport by Metropolitan Police officers on 23rd of October last year on his way back from Moscow, who refused to give the PIN codes for his iPhone and Apple computer, and was later charged with willfully refusing to comply with a duty under Schedule 7 of the Terrorism Act. Now, why would they even... Was there suspicion under the Terrorism Act that he had been involved in some kind of terrorist activity for going to Moscow? Very, very strange. Golding denied the charge but was found guilty following a trial at Westminster Magistrates Court in London on Wednesday. Chief Magistrate, and I'm sure these people are not politically biased at all, Emma Arbuthnot, ruled there was no doubt that Golding had failed to comply with the request for information despite his obligations being explained to him and being warned over and over that he risked arrest. All right, bullshit. Anyway, so does that mean they get his phone anyway? What does it mean? Anyway, we'll follow up on that. It's just total insanity what's happening to some of these people. Also, just quickly on this, I saw, if you're up in Michigan, anybody watching, I guess be careful. Thousands are being evacuated. There's a dam that has failed or is about to fail. I think there's two already and there's more coming because of a lot of rain, heavy rainfall. The failure of Edenville Dam and Sanford Dam in Michigan late Tuesday has brought record-setting flooding to nearby communities and thousands of residents evacuate their home. Of course, there's some kind of political shenanigans going on with the governor there, Gretchen Whitmer, as well, regarding the lockdown and all that kind of stuff. Let's take a look at some of this real quick here. See what's going on. See how bad it is. Pictures of it here. Titta Bawasi. What are you? pronounce that?
Today, the Edenville and Sanford dams in Midland County breached. If you have a relative or a friend somewhere else in the state that you can go and stay with, please go to their homes. If you don't, go to one of the many shelters that have been set up.
Gee, slurring a bit there. That's just me. That's right. The flooding threatened a Dow chemical plant in the area. Like, fantastic. Just what we need. Maybe nuclear power. Is there a nuclear power plant up there, too? You get the idea. So good to check in on that. So stay. Hope you're staying safe up there. Like we need more of this kind of shit right now, right? Have some other news on that later too. Quick update on the Ahmed Arbery. There's a video now that shows that he has been had encounters with the law, and I know that of course the media takes this of you know this is the default discrimination by the police because it's a white supremacy organization and they target people for no reason. And if you're black and out about, cops will harass you kind of thing. I know they take that line on this, right? But so two times it's been encounters. I think actually the first time, let's go back, this 2 times, 2017 then. I thought it was 2016, 2017. But one time cops tried to tase Ahmed Arbery during a 2017 incident in a park video show. So that came out. Apparently, it was a park where people were doing drugs, I guess, that the argument was. And the cops, you know, came close. They were asking what he was doing, blah, blah, blah. But that's not the video I want to look at. I want to look at the other one when he actually gets arrested by a police officer for shoplifting, right? So this kind of painting this picture that, although the media used a picture of Arbery in a tuxedo, which was kind of like the checkmate, right? Well, he's in a tux. You can't say anything now, kind of thing. It shows that he wasn't this kind of saint, right? That they're painting him out to be. He's doing shoplifting at Walmarts and stuff like that. Anyway, let's check out this video here.
All four of you. Tell me about the TV.
TV?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any TV.
Well, what about the 65-inch TV?
65-inch TV.
Do me a favor.
Uh-oh.
And don't make this hard on yourselves. All of you take a seat.
Take a seat.
Take a seat.
I don't know. TV,
take a
bro.
Seat.
TV? What
take a
fuck?
Seat.
What?
Now.
Sir,
it's that one right there with the fur jacket. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. He's old enough. He's 20. The other, he's 17. These two are 15. They were inside the store, though?
Yeah.
Okay.
You went inside what?
And on the patio riding bikes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, those three trespass. Him's going to be trespassing. We're going to take charge.
What we do?
He stole the TV.
He tried to roll the TV out.
No, man.
Yeah, no, that don't work, man.
I had my
dad. That'll work, man.
I had my receipt.
Yeah, where's that?
On the seat.
Stay on the ground.
Yeah, where's the TV?
The TV, I ain't seen the TV. TV is where y'all have it.
Yeah, I know.
Your TV is in there.
Just back, show me 23 in the park called Walmart.
I had a receipt, bro.
Well, where's the receipt at?
My receipt.
Stay. I didn't stay seated.
I got money,
you know what?
Bro.
You know what?
I'm not a bro.
I want you
okay.
Lay on your stomach. Lay on your stomach.
I'm not laying
on your stomach.
So which one you guys
lay on your stomach. You're under arrest. You're under arrest for shoplifting.
And there it is.
Yeah, you have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to speak to an attorney and have an attorney present during any question. If any time you can't afford an attorney, it won't be provided for your government expense.
What are you trying to do?
It's called shoplifting when tried to wheel that TV out. Huh?
You tried to roll the TV out?
Yeah. All right.
All right. So there you go. All right. Little update there for you. Interesting, huh? So, you know, them joggers keeping at it. Okay. Let's move on. Let's talk a bit about some very, very smart COVID inventions in time of crisis, in time of need. We need to have various things so we can continue and operate out and about when we're in social life, but we still keep our distances. A restaurant in Maryland intends to use bumper tables to keep customers 6 feet apart once it begins to take seated diners. So I would assume that this may be the personnel working at this particular joint that are testing these things. Check it out. Nice. So what do you guys think of this? It's gonna be a big hit, like a bumper cars and dinner. Dinner and a show. Very good. So that's the new normal now, guys. Gotta get used to it. Gotta obey. Gotta submit. You know, don't want to be a nuisance on others. You know, here, you know, Israel is of course, you know, very, very high IQ. They're helping us out. Here's a invention so that you can continue to eat your food while you still wear your mask. Check this out here. Yep, there you go. There you have it. Like, let me see when he's... Ooh, he barely can get it in through the mouth. Let's replay that again. Look at this, it's... Oh, we get stuck on the metal. Let's see, it happens again, I think. Yep. I mean, they do it, right? But it's just there about. Can you imagine that in a burger? Jesus Christ. All right, you get the idea. Funny stuff. BBC News actually reported on this, too. Inventors develop a coronavirus mask that lets you eat without taking it off. It's like we showed that in We Can Worry, but a straw, right? You can have a straw, a hole for your straw, so you can drink drinks while you're protecting yourself from COVID. Maybe this is the exact same video. Let's see if they have a little bit more here on this. This is just an amazing invention. Amazing stuff. A remote-controlled mask. You push the little lever, I guess.
Mask will be opened mechanically.
Mechanically,
hand remote, or automatically when the fork is coming to the mask. Then you can
nice.
Eat.
This is the enjoy, extended cut, guys.
Drink, and you take out the fork, and it will be closed, and you're protected against the virus and the other people sitting with you.
It's a must-have, yeah, I would buy one.
I don't think this mess could hold with this kind of ice cream. It's dripping all over, I wouldn't want to wear it afterwards.
Maybe if it had an apron.
Jesus Christ. They're going to go into full-on production here. Submitted a patent, that's good. Gotta use that brain, you know? Gotta use that brain. Great way. BBC News, thank you. I do appreciate that.
The two main symptoms of coronavirus.
Okay, shut up. Shut up. Okay. All right, back on track here. We have some more stuff to go through here. Some important stuff as well. It's not just going to be nonsense here, but I thought that they could be funny. Let me go through a couple more of your DLive chats here, guys. Let me see here. Where were we? KP77, I think, was the last one. Whore with massive tits sends a Dominus as white pride worldwide. Thank you. I appreciate that. Russian bot 14 sends a Dominus as well. 07, Henrik, which is, again, I think that's a code for a forbidden hand gesture. That's right. All right, so let's take a little video break here. Check this one out. I might do it at a little bit heightened speed, but it's actually good regarding the testing issue, right? The PCR test, that kind of thing. I'm going to do it at 1.25 and see if that's enough. Good stuff. Harking back to some of the stuff we talked about, it's got to be a month and a half, maybe even 2 months ago now, regarding what it is that we're actually looking at regarding COVID-19 and exosomes. Check it out. Very good.
Do you have an open mind? Can you suspend judgment for a moment? Most people can't. But what if your job depends on it? What if the freedom to hug people depends on it? What if your life depends on it? Here's a new theory. First, consider that we live in a world where everything is toxic. The soil, the water, the air, our food, even our medicines are toxic. Even stress can be toxic. Now imagine that all these toxins are poisonous to us on a cellular level. Imagine that our cells have a defense and respond to this situation. Poisoned genetic material, either RNA or DNA, is packaged up and sent out of the cell in tiny balls of protein. Let's call these balls of genetic material exosomes. Let's imagine that exosomes can act as messages to alert other cells of a particular poison, and so all throughout the body, more and more cells package up the poisoned material and release it. Also, at certain times of the year due to temperature cycles, humans tend to purge a high number of these poisoned genetic materials out of the body, resulting in symptoms of illness. These exosomes neither cause illness nor are they infectious, though they do appear to spread throughout the body. Now, that's exosome theory. Let's move on to the established theory of viruses. Viruses are generally regarded as not alive. They have no cellular structure and do not reproduce on their own. Though we do have trillions of them inside our bodies. They are tiny bits of genetic material, either RNA or DNA, packaged in tiny protein balls that appear to exit and enter cells. Sound familiar? We believe that some of these entities are infectious and pathogenic, transmitting amongst humans and reproducing inside our bodies, causing illness and death. So let's look at the situation for this coronavirus and compare what is happening to these two theories. Let's first consider the origin story of the coronavirus. A group of people had a respiratory illness unresolved by antibiotics, so medical officials began looking, of course, for a virus. What they eventually found under the electron microscope were small protein balls being excreted by the cell. Okay, first comparison. This would make sense in both exosome theory and virus theory. Then they searched for and found an RNA fragment that they had not seen before in some of these patients. This would make sense in both exosome theory and virus theory. Now, they did not prove that they could infect somebody or an animal with a purified form of this so-called virus. They simply assumed that this RNA fragment was the cause of the illness they saw in some patients, and they assumed it was contagious. So do you know how the tests work? It's not a binary test, like a pregnancy test. It's called a PCR test, and it involves amplifying genetic material by doubling it in dozens of cycles until you have billions or trillions of the original molecules, and then using those results to determine if you have enough of the identified RNA fragment to be considered positive. Here's the thing. At a certain point of amplification, every single person would test positive. They use an arbitrary cutoff point where they stop doubling the material. That cutoff point is different amongst different tests for COVID-19. In fact, there were 10 different cutoff points amongst the 33 tests approved by the FDA. Seems a little strange, right? You might find it interesting that the Nobel Prize-winning inventor of the test did not believe it should be used to diagnose infectious illness. And perhaps you've heard about some of the problems with the test, such as the high rate of false positives. But in any case, let's say that after 37 times of doubling a specific genetic material they found in your body, they determine that you have enough of the RNA they are looking for to be considered positive. This could make sense in both exosome theory and virus theory. But clearly there are clusters of people getting ill. Look at New York City. It must be a virus. However, if you are being poisoned by something in your environment, it's likely people near you are too. And if we commonly purge these poisons during specific times of the year, many people may have symptoms of illness all at once. This fits either theory. Now, here's where things get interesting. Let's go to the Diamond Princess cruise ship situation. Did you know that people who were bunked together for days had conflicting positive and negative tests? How could one person have this highly infectious illness but not transmit it to somebody bunking with them for days? This would make sense in exosome theory, where the balls of RNA are not contagious, but it would not make sense for virus theory, where the balls of RNA are supposed to be highly infectious. Let's take a look at the first case of transmission in Illinois. A woman traveled to Wuhan, came back, and both she and her chronically ill husband ended up testing positive. Medical authorities then tracked over 300 people who had had close contact with them to see who acquired the virus. And guess what? Zero positives. This again would make sense in exosome theory, since exosomes are not contagious. But it would not make sense for virus theory, where this is supposed to be an infectious virus. In fact, do you know that there are many documented cases all around the world of patients testing positive for this RNA fragment with no relevant travel history and no known possible contact with somebody who was infected? These were people in the middle of nowhere, early on in this whole crisis, who suddenly were testing positive. This would make sense, again, in exosome theory, where the RNA is being produced as an immune response within our cells. But it would not make sense for virus theory, where you are supposed to have had contact with somebody with the virus. What about the high levels of people testing positive who don't get sick? In fact, 80% of people testing positive are either asymptomatic or have slight cold symptoms. Why? This would make sense in exosome theory, since the RNA fragments are not the cause of the illness. But it would not make sense for virus theory, where this virus is supposed to cause the illness. Things get even stranger. Did you know that some people go from testing positive to testing negative to testing positive again in a matter of days? That would make sense for exosome theory, where perhaps the cells are simply releasing more or less of these exosomes depending on certain conditions. But it doesn't make sense in virus theory, where you are supposedly infected until you have rid yourself of the virus. So which of these theories seems more likely to you? What if you heard that there are virologists who believe that viruses are actually exosomes? What if I told you that doctors and other scientific experts also believe this? Ultimately, regardless of which theory you believe in at this point, the established infectious virus theory or the emerging theory of exosomes, how confident are you in the PCR test? Are you really interested in having your life hinge on the results you get from this potentially meaningless test? Do you want your loved ones tested? Do you want to be tested? Or shall we perhaps refuse the test?
All right, there you go. So a little bit of a kind of a flashback, I guess, to some of the stuff we talked about early on when we kind of started to just really dive into questioning what it is that we're looking at here. So kind of a good overview on that too. It's from the channel Mikey Landings. Check it out. Pretty good. Should you take the COVID-19 test? Good summary. Pretty interesting, huh? Again, I don't know. I haven't made up my mind. I like to hear different theories because it's so odd, right? The kind of the differences that we've seen, and the sporadic nature of things. So it's very plausible. So it's happened in the past. You know, the experts don't always have all the answers, and there are other people coming from the outside that have different theories that eventually turns out to be, the more validated theory, whatever. So Spencer the First sent a diamond and says, if COVID was real, they'd make sure we all got it. Yeah, it's a good point. And also, it would be very interesting if China, I'm not saying they knowingly did this, or maybe they did, I don't know, but let's assume that it's the exosome issue, right? That means they would be targeting a natural immune response when this the vaccine comes around and stuff like that. And think if it's Moderna's mRNA vaccine too. That means that they could reprogram your immunity, essentially. It would target your immunity to produce things which fights your very, for lack of a better term, your cleansing process of your body. If that is the case, that's insane. And that's going to go down real well. It's going to be great, right? Okay, so that's interesting. I saw two more came in here on DonorBox, guys. Let me take those real quick and then we'll move on. Conrad K. Sent $25. Thank you, Conrad. I appreciate that. It's very kind of you. And he says, more funds to cover jogging events, as well as doctor and engineered programs. Well, thank you. Hail Red Eyes and chat. Well, thank you, Conrad. I appreciate that. That's very kind of you. Rudbert Hildebrand sends $10 on DonorBox as well. And he says, Henrik, did you see the latest grooming scandal in the UK? A white girl was tortured, beaten, and raped numerous times for failing to show up to sex parties held by grooming gangs. This story needs more attention. See the provided link. I saved it actually over here. Let me pull that up real quick. Looks like a tweet thread here. It's going to be some nasty images here. This is just crazy. Oh, jeez. He says, this story needs more attention. We cannot live like this anymore. This has to stop. Keep fighting, brother. Thank you for sending that. That's just crazy. I did not see this yet. A girl was tortured for failing to show up to sex parties held by her grooming gang. because of COVID-19. So they beat, slashed her, tried to cut her finger off, and raped her. They had previously given her brain bleed, tried to cut her nipples and breasts off. Holy shit. National file. British girl beaten and sliced for not having sex with Asian men during lockdown. Now we're talking about Pakistani men. Is that what, you know, Britain has this tendency to just kind of PC-fy the term, right? According to a report on a Facebook page, a young British woman was tortured by a gang of Asian men for being unable to sleep with other Asian men at parties due to social distancing. Oh, holy shit. So, of course, that means it doesn't stop. These things doesn't stop. That's just nuts and crazy. Disgusting. I have some stories later on. We'll see if we can get to them or not regarding similar things happening in Sweden, too. There's been a... It's essentially turning into South Africa, right? There's just an uptick and an increase of rapes and tortures and humiliations and kidnappings and robberies and these humiliation crimes and stuff like that. It's hard to look at that stuff, but we got to do it. We got to expose this stuff. People, because the mainstream media don't cover this shit. You know, they just ignore it. They just move on, maybe tangentially a little bit or something, but they don't look at the deeper reasons, rather roots for this shit, right? All right, crazy stuff. Thank you for sending the link to it. I do appreciate it, although I'm not happy to see it. But thank you, Hubert. I appreciate that. Very kind of you. Thank you for the donation. All right, so let's look at the situation here before we move on a little bit. When it comes to Sweden, right? Sweden's corona woes. And talk about how it's been attacked internationally, of course, for taking a different route. And despite the fact that they've chosen this route for the wrong reasons, getting to that in a moment, I still think at the end of the day, they are doing the right thing. And it might be that they're doing it for the wrong reasons. They have different agendas, of course, within the government and stuff like that. It could even be a program to try to take out the elderly. This is what Sweden's socialist system has done for decades. When older people become a burden on the system, they just basically like, let's get rid of them. That might have been their like strategy for dealing with the issue, right? Or somehow thinking like, you know what, let's counteract this and we can get rid of some of those old Swedes and stuff like that. Now, I don't know. That's speculation, right? That would, of course, be disgusting and horrible and all for the wrong reasons. But since it hasn't been that deadly, it has, you know, kind of nullified itself and Sweden has ended up in a fairly decent position. Now, it's fairly high on some of the lists, and that, of course, has to do with the fact that you will see a quicker rate of spread in a society like Sweden, but they will develop herd immunity, so its second wave, etc. will be. It's a long-term plan, right? If we take the official view, what they talk about, they take the long-term plan, herd immunity, it's going to be better, right? It's a hard hit now, but it's not just this kind of emotional, like a little girl that like, oh my God, someone is dead. Like you didn't care when these people died of the flu, like 2018 or 19 or 17 or 16 or 15 or 14 or all the way back into our start. You didn't care about it then. You didn't say a word. The media didn't cover it. Although their season where many more people than this season have died of the flu, right? So, but no one bat an eyelid about that. And there are things in place to help the elderly. There's a law. That you can't, you can't go into the elderly homes right now to try to protect them, etc. In other words, they've not done this weird thing where they isolate or quarantine the healthy, which is like a first time in history. But they've tried to quarantine the people that are vulnerable and sick, right? Anyway, Yahoo News reported on this here. As Europe slowly exits, Sweden hunkers down for long haul, right? So it's been a longer squeeze, but it's less intense, right? And then, of course, in the end, they hope for herd immunity. I still think it's the right thing. Sweden has taken a soft approach to virus restrictions, although its rules are likely to be in place longer than in other countries. Officials are adamant their strategy is a winner in the long term. This fight against COVID-19 is a marathon, Prime Minister Stefan Löfven said. And these people, don't get me wrong, these people are inept, incompetent and stuff. And again, the main immunologist, Agnes Tegnell in Sweden, he said that we're an open society. We can't close our borders. We can't close things down, right? This is insanity. Obviously, they should have. But due to the fact how the impact now of the virus is probably going to be much... Well, I mean, look at it this way, right? I haven't really talked about this, but look, the coming food shortage, the destruction of the economy, Do you think this is going to help old people at the end? Everyone who's like emotional, like a little girl about this, and like, but you're it's not about intentionally killing anybody. Okay, let's let that go first thing. But it's like, you didn't care before that old people are dying all the time, and the reality of things is, you will not be able to stop people from dying, especially old people that have. They have illnesses. They have a weakened immune system, and if it's not going to be this, it's going to be something else, right? It happens. It doesn't mean that we're happy about it. It doesn't mean that we're celebrating it, but it means that this crazy attitude to death and to life and to protection and if we have to burn down society to save one person, we'll do it kind of thing. I mean, that's insanity, right? So think of the long-term effects and the consequences. If we get a food shortage, hiked in prices, all this stuff, do you think take a country like Sweden, it's already super strained for our elderly, right? They're sitting in elderly homes where they barely are getting food. Saw a story the other day where they're talking about lowering the temperature 2 degrees in these homes where the old people are sitting and rotting away and dying so that they can put that money on other stuff. What do you think they'll put it on? Migration, open borders, refugees, government, social welfare, shit like this, right? So the situation is rotten already, and it's bad, and it's horrible. And that needs to change, obviously. Not saying that that's right by any means. I'm just saying that people don't really care in the same way about those kinds of things, right? They look the other way. But do you think it's going to get better if we just strangle out completely the economy? And who's going to be squeezed out by that? It's going to be these old people. It's going to be the vulnerable people, obviously. So it's this short-term... like an emotional girl, like who's hysterical about something, like some liberal who's just like all wound up about this one thing, and then she's like, "Well, okay, well, you want to fix this now, short term, because it feels bad for you, or you have bad emotions about this thing." But the reality is, if we do your way, your proposal, like the long term effects are going to be, you might not see it right away, but in 3 months, in a year, maybe from now, there's going to be absolute horror. In some of these places, they're already like really squeezed out. So, again, all for the wrong reasons, but I still think that they did the right thing. So it says here, while people in other European countries have gradually begun returning to their workplace in recent weeks, and by the way, this doesn't seem to matter from the point of view of what the authorities are telling us anyway. Because they're saying, well, it's going to be a second wave, and then it's going to be a third wave, and it's going to be much worse and stuff. So it's like, again, this is just short-term thinking, all of this stuff. Sweden has strongly advised to continue working from home, and possibly not just for weeks, but for months to come. So, it's like, okay, well, fine. The European Union has started planning for a phased restart of travel this summer, but Sweden has told its residents they will have to holiday at home, extending a non-essential travel advisory until at least July 15th. The middle of the country's main holiday month. So we'll see what happens. We'll see who comes out of this. It's pretty crazy, right? But who comes out of this stronger in the end. That's what it stands between now. But I'm still glad that they did it. Because at least we have a country to compare to. And again, it's for all for the wrong reasons. These people are incompetent. Anders Tegnell is incompetent. But if you want to see the kind of stuff that Sweden has been... how they've been dealing with our elderly for decades before the coronavirus showed up. That's what happens in a socialist system. That's what happens when you have the type of leadership that we've had in Sweden under the Social Democrats. And it wasn't better under the Moderate Party or Conservatives. They're the same thing. The borders were open under the Social Democrats. It was continued under them for decades. Then the Moderate Party came into power for a little bit and they pried them open just slightly more. And then the Social Democrats get back in now, and then they open it up a little bit more. It's been just a constant of that, right? It hasn't been a difference. But just growing up in the socialist system is soul crushing, right? It's disgusting, the system that they've imposed on us. The healthcare system is one of the first to go. They don't care about people. They kick you out as soon as they can. I know that in a capitalist country, or whatever you want to call it, like in the opposite. Perspective where big pharma rules everything. They chain you to the bed and try to keep you as long as possible so they can squeeze all the money out of you. So none of them is ideal. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying Sweden has been really bad. So here was a footage here where the woman is, the daughter is filming this. Anita Persson, 55 years old. She was taken to hospital in late March after being diagnosed with the coronavirus. The hospital refused to give her oxygen and sent her to intensive care. And then her daughter recorded a piece of a video, which is not while she's dying, but the daughter claimed she died, I think, the next day, I think. Something like that. Let's see if we can load this video here, too. Maybe it's... let me turn off the shield so you guys can see that. But this is how they deal with cattle in a country like Sweden, right? So again, if they had some idea that they wanted to... Let's get rid of the old, right? I wouldn't doubt it. But luckily, if that was their approach, it wasn't that bad. But it doesn't mean that some people are squeezed out. Like here, take a look at this here. Here's what Bernie wants to give to America, right? Socialized medicine. It's going to be great. It's going to be, well, take care of everybody. Bullshit. We've seen the queues grow longer and longer and longer. We've seen them kick out people. They don't treat them. I mean, it's disgusting, right? Here's the video. So they refused to give her oxygen, which is a different situation from the US, where you could make $40,000 on each uninsured patient that come in that needs to be placed on a respirator. See, in Sweden, they don't have that problem because they don't get any money. There's no compensation in it. In fact, it's costly to treat people. So they just say, you know what? Screw that. It's just an old, useless Swedish person anyway. They wanted some new, fresh blood from sub-Saharan Africa, from the Middle East. That's what they want. They want to replace the population. So screw these old people. Anyway, that's just a short clip, about a minute long. We're just gasping for air, right? And then they say the day after she died. So this is not of her dying. It's just struggling to breathe for her there. But yeah, so you have that as a kind of a side issue to all of this too, that it's like, you know, just because it's like I say, oh, they did the right thing, it doesn't mean that I agree to all the things that's going on within the healthcare system or what the reasons why the authorities did what they did, etc. I just think on a lucky chance, I just think it's, you know, it's the right way. So here's another take on this too. Sweden's top infectious disease expert says COVID-19 lockdowns are not based on science. History shows he could be right, which is interesting. And this will segue us into the story about where the lockdown story comes from, the origins of it, and also how it was argued how impractical it was when it was launched, right? Let me go back here. See a couple of DLive came in. Let me take those real quick here, guys. Let me see. Where are we here? Spencer the First, I think, was the last one. Draconian Gimp of Death, Sensei Diamond, thank you. Salosopher hands out a sub. I appreciate everyone handing out subs. He's doing 2, 3, 4, I think 5 in a row. Thank you. Mr. Noseberg also hands out 2. Appreciate that. Very kind of you guys. Thank you so much. Yeah, so... let me read this a little bit from here. The debate over COVID-19 lockdowns has thrust Sweden into the global spotlight. I'll go up here. Anders Tegnell, the nation's top infectious disease expert, said he's confident Sweden's approach is the right one. Again, this is we know that this is gambling, right? But it's the same thing that other nations are doing. They are also gambling. They're gambling on a different. They're gambling on a potential long-term effect, which might be much worse, right? We'll see. It's too early to tell. As nations around the world begin to ease lockdown restrictions, passed amid the scariest pandemic since the 1918 Spanish flu. I would argue that's not quite right. Well, it's maybe scariest, psychologically speaking, sure. But has it been the worst? No. A new battle is brewing among disease experts and the punditry class. On one side are lockdown proponents who compare lockdown skeptics to anti-vaxxers who endanger people's lives because they are drunk on freedom. Yeah, that's what it's about. It's just being drunk. You want to go to your hair salon and you want to go out on your boat while you're lying around in your... You're sick of lying around in your mansion. Shame on you. We've been over this. People cannot pay their bills. They cannot feed their kids. They're going to lose their homes. That's why they want to go back to work. It's not because they're drunk on freedom. The freedom is like, it's not what it's about. I hate when they strawman these issues like this. Anyway. So the accusation is we endanger lives because we're drunk on freedom and want to prematurely ease restrictions, which they say could result in new spike in COVID-19 cases and deaths. Well, that's happened before. It's going to happen again. Every flu season, there are spikes in cases and there are deaths. This has happened every single time. So far, this is not way out of bounds. I have another article about that in a moment here, too. Lockdown skeptics, on the other hand, draw the battle lines differently. On one side are ideologues heavily invested in the idea of lockdown regarding the cost. The Wall Street Journal, and again, it's not just about to save the money, we need to open up. No, it's framed wrong. The consequences of the lockdown is going to be extended for months and months and months to come, possibly years, right? We don't know how much yet. And that could prove in itself to be much more deadly than the other stuff. We just wait until the food shortages really kick in, right? We'll see what happens then. Anyway, you know the argument, right? There's a true front war here of like all these different sides fighting with each other. And it's just turning pretty nutty, to be honest. But let's go into this regarding the origins then of the lockdown, the surprising origins of the lockdown. 2006, we'll have to go back to here. Here's a story from AIER on this here too. Let's check this out. So I'm going to jump in here a little bit in the middle of this. We don't have to read. They just go over kind of the overall situation, that there's financial incentives and stuff like that, and you know, for hospitals and all kinds of stuff, right? But they say here, basically, there's a bizarre tale here of how to get started, right? What's truly surprising is just how recent the theory behind the lockdown and forced distancing actually is. So far, as anyone can tell, the intellectual machinery that has that made this mess was invented 14 years ago, and not by epidemiologists, but by computer simulation modelers. So there we go with that stuff again, right? We've talked about Neil Ferguson. We've talked about this stuff with the climate change BS, right? As soon as you have models and you begin to inject data into it, which is most of the time it's going to be faulty. Most of the time you're not going to be able to account for all the variables. So these models are going to just run off on their own and do something completely unexpected and different, right? It was adopted not by experienced doctors. They warned ferociously against it, but by politicians, right? This is a political thing. Again, they tell, well, this is science. And it's like, no, it's not. It's by politicians that have an invested interest in either screwing things up, you know, having the right people in place attain more power or influence or a medical tyranny, or it's by people who seek to, I think there's an element of that too, that there's a scorched earth tactic that they want to have. Like when Trump goes to election 2020, he needs to be the president that had the worst economy ever and the highest unemployment ever. I mean, these, you know, Trump derangement syndrome folks, they believe that. They think that's a good strategy, right? So let's start with the phrase social distancing, which has mutated into forced human separation. The first I heard about it was in the 2011 movie Contagion. Of course it was. So many things goes back to that movie, actually. Trending on Amazon and Netflix, of course, right away when all this shit began, right? Reprogramming people into, oh, is this what's happening and this is what we're doing now? Even the Gupta guy had a role as a CDC head in the movie and all this kind of weird stuff. Anyway, the first time it appeared in a New York Times article was February 12th, 2006. If the avian flu goes pandemic, while Tamiflu and vaccines are still in short supply, experts say the only protection most Americans will have is social distancing, which is the new political correct way of saying quarantine. That's right. And that's why the first time ever in history that we've quarantined every single person, including the sick, including the healthy. Very strange. Maybe you don't remember the avian flu in 2006 because it didn't amount to much. It's true, despite all the extreme warnings about its lethality, that H5N1 didn't turn out much at all. What it did do, however, was to send the existing president at that time, George W. Bush, boy George, to the library to read about the 2018 flu and its catastrophic results. He asked for some experts to submit some plans to him about what to do when the real thing comes along. So New York Times goes on here talking about this too. They say 14 years ago, two federal government doctors, Richard Hatchett and Carter Metcher, met with colleagues at a burger joint in suburban Washington for a final review of a proposal they knew would be treated like a piñata, telling Americans to stay home from work and school the next time the country was hit by a deadly pandemic. How that idea, born out of a request by President George W. Bush to ensure that the nation was better prepared for the next contagious disease outbreak, became the heart of the national playbook for responding to a pandemic. and it's one of the untold stories of the coronavirus crisis. So it goes on to say, and it had some unexpected detours, unraveling the story, right? They're talking about the Department of Defense was involved, whatever, but includes a deep dive into the history of the 1918 Spanish flu and an important discovery that was kicked off by a high school research project pursued by the daughter of a scientist at the Sandia National Laboratories. Now, you might know, I don't know how much you know about Sandia, but they're pretty interesting. They're heavily involved in a lot of like nuclear research and stuff like that. A lot of things are experimental development things happens at Sandia. Sandia was, of course, I think, where also the location, right, where they had all the early nuclear weapons tests and stuff like that. Pretty interesting, that connection that's there. The concept of social distancing is now intimately familiar almost to everyone, but as it first made its way through the federal bureaucracy in 2006 and 2007, it was viewed as impractical, unnecessary, and politically infeasible. Again, fast forward 14 years when we're just like two and a half decades crazier. Now it's fine. Again, I mean, it did become official policy under George W. Bush, right? So we can blame him. But it goes on here. What about this mention of the high school daughter of 14? Well, her name is Laura M. Glass, and she recently declined to be interviewed when the Albuquerque Journal did a deep dive of this history. Laura, with some guidance from her dad, devised a computer simulation that showed how people, family members, co-workers, students in schools, people in social situations interact. What she discovered was that school kids come in contact with about 140 people a day, more than any other group. Based on that finding, her program showed that in a hypothetical town of 10,000 people, 5,000 would be infected during a pandemic if no measures were taken, but only 500 would be infected if the schools were closed. Laura's name appears on the foundational paper arguing for the lockdowns and forced human separation. The paper is Targeted Social Distancing Designs for Pandemic Influenza from 2006. It has set out a model of forced separation and applied with good results backwards in time to 1957. They concluded with a chilling call for what amounts to a totalitarian lockdown, all stated very matter-of-factly. And then they go through in the rest here talking about how unpopular this would be, how we would be rejected, how the consequences of this would just be way worse. You know, again, you might save some lives on the front end of this thing, but on the back end, in the wake of this thing, you'll have way worse kind of scenarios. But that didn't help that, you know, George W. Bush, the administration, nailed this down as official policy, and here we are. Now, it is interesting, too, to keep in mind that China did also take this route, right? It's almost like these kinds of things that were worked out a couple of decades ago, especially with like Event 201 and kind of how globalized everything has become, that you had a model country like China, right? The West loves China. They say we're to become like them with the social credit score, the AI, the surveillance, and all this stuff, right? The slavish mentality that we that the Chinese have when it comes to submitting to their government. So I understand this idea too, that whatever they did, we kind of had to emulate or mimic that, right? But it does have an interesting history in terms of computer modeling. And again, taking a turn which is like a computer simulation is never going to be reality. It's never going to match reality. It's never going to represent it accurately. We should never base the primary decision making on modeling, because it will be nutty and cranky and all wrong. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. Absolutely, you know. All right, let me take a couple of these real quick here before we move on. I see there's a bunch of subs again handed out. I appreciate that very much. Draconian Gimp of Death sends a diamond. It's a second wave equals louder trauma shift in narrative, ? Yeah, that's what I think. I think they didn't get what they want out of the first wave, the first season of COVID-19. So COVID-20 or whatever they will actually move on to call it will pick up even worse. There's that other stories now that begin surfacing about the Kawasaki syndrome, the Kawasaki-like syndrome that appears in kids. They say for some reason there's heart swelling, abdominal pain, and rashes that young babies experience, and they said it could be related to COVID. I saw a number of those stories being whipped out. We covered, I think, in the Weekend Warrior a couple of, like, 2 weeks back. And it was very strange because it's like, I'm not saying it's not happening, but he just felt that they've whipped out these kinds of things as almost like a threat, that they didn't get what they wanted. Now people are starting to go back. It's not like, it wasn't as hard as it wanted to be. So that they will continue to try to scare you into submission, to handing everything away and just submitting, doing whatever they say, even if it's rational, even if it's not, right? So here's an article from The Spectator, the American branch of it, referencing a new study, a Stanford study, that suggests that the coronavirus might not be as deadly as the flu, even, right? Which is, of course, what a lot of people have said, right? Older estimates for IFR are markedly lower than the figures shown about a couple of months ago. And this is what we experienced, right? One of the great unknowns, says here, of the COVID-19 crisis is just how deadly the disease is. Much of the panic dates from the moment in early March when the World Health Organization published a mortality rate of 3.2%. Remember in March, that's the same time when Fauci wrote in the New England Journal of Medicine that it has a death rate of about 0.1 or 0.2, I think he wrote. But no one questioned him about that, and they just went along with it, which turned out to be a crude case fatality rate, driving the numbers of deaths by the numbers of recorded cases, ignoring the large number of cases which are asymptomatic or otherwise go unrecorded. And that's what people have said all this time, that you have to also see people that have had the disease and recovered. Again, all of this is not even taking into the exosome stuff that we watched earlier. This is just going the official line. Like, you know, it's like if you show all these people and all of them have it and none of them get sick, or maybe they got slightly ill and then they got better, whatever, that would drive the mortality rate down dramatically. That's why it's so strange that they did such a panicked reaction to it at a stage when we didn't even know, right? So of course you would just, well, just tons of people are coming in and they're all testing positive. Yeah, because they had symptoms. They were worried. They went there and they go tested and say, yep, here's another one. So it's like wherever they tested, they showed up, which seems to indicate everybody's going to get sick, but that's not the case. The Imperial College modeling, which was so influential on the UK government, the US too, by the way, assumed an infection fatality rate, IFR, of 0.9%. This was used to compute the infamous prediction that 250,000 Britons would die unless the government abandoned its mitigation strategy and adopted instead a policy of suppressing the virus through lockdown. Imperial later revised the estimate of the IFR down to 0.66%, although the March 16 paper, which predicted 250,000 deaths, were not updated. In the past few weeks, a slew of serological studies estimating the prevalence of the infection in the general population has become available. This has allowed Professor John Ioannidis of Stanford University to work out the IFR in 12 different locations. They range between 0.02% and 0.5%. Very low, in other words, right? 0.5 is a little higher, but down to 0.02, that's like, it's nothing, right? Although Ioannidis, I think it is a Greek name, has corrected those raw figures to take account of the demographic balance and come up with estimates between 0.02% and 0.4%. The lowest estimates came from Kobe, Japan, found to have an IFR of 0.02%, and Oise in northern France with IFR of 0.04%. The highest were in Geneva, a raw figure of 0.5%, and Gangelt in Germany, 0.28%. The usual caveats apply. Most studies to detect the prevalence of the SARS-CoV-19-2 virus, or COVID-2 virus, I go on automatic here, in the general population remain unpublished, interesting, and have not yet been peer-reviewed. And of course, it was one of the reasons here why Sweden talked about the fact that the lockdowns are not based on science. They contradicted Neil Ferguson, or they counteract that and said these papers have not been peer-reviewed. And so in that sense, they did the right thing, that they questioned it as opposed to just swallowing this because everyone else did this, right? So that's something that they should have credit for. Even if it's for the wrong reason, at least they did say, well, this doesn't look right. We're going to try something different here. Some are likely to be unrepresentatives of the general population. The OISE, that's Northern France study, in particular, was based on student teachers and parents in a single high school, which was known to be a hotspot on COVID-19 infections. At the other end of the table, Geneva has a relatively high age profile, which is likely to skew its death rate upward, right? So it goes on from there. But yeah, so it's pretty interesting. It's not as deadly as the flu. The latest study from Stanford. We'll see what turns out to be true there. But yeah, I don't doubt it. I just think this massive, massive overreaction, frankly. All right, so I have a couple of other stories here too, guys, to deal with. The Dark Decade Ahead was an interesting story out of the week. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But they were basically going through the consequences of the lockdown, kind of the warnings here a little bit of what we talked about earlier. It goes through in the beginning a little bit of like how so many things have transformed, all the bad things that's happening overall in society. I want to read a little bit of a passage here. It says, this is what the end of history looks like. We had asked ourselves how it would appear and when. These questions mattered, and not only incidentally. They matter less now as we prepare for what I suspect will be at least a decade of immiserization. Immiserization, is that how you pronounce that? I looked it up earlier. It was like creating really bad conditions. Immiserization, I think it is. On a scale unimaginable to at least three generations. Bugs me. I listened to it earlier and then I forgot it. Immiserization. Anyway, it is important to observe that this has happened because of the lockdown. Not even proximately, but because of the virus, for which the median age of death is high and the average and the American life expectancy. In the last century, the upheavals of the interwar period were the result of worldwide economic depression, not of a barely remembered pandemic. Serious as it might have been, we are not witnessing long-rumored revenge of nature, but a way of life that has always been unsustainable and unsustainable extinguishing itself. Numbers will be sought to be explained around the world explain the world around us. What it does mean to say that the present crisis is somehow twice as bad as that of 2008. The 2008 housing collapse and everything, right? That a fifth of the country is out of work, that the only industry now hiring is debt collection. How are we to respond to predictions that over 100,000 Americans may die from what sociologists call deaths of despair? So does anybody think of these people, right? Does anybody think of the long-term consequences here? How can we even begin to make sense of the fact that the consequences of two and a half months will be with us for five times that many years? That a child born today will be a teenager before we return to anything that resembles, even externally, the precarious equilibrium to which we have been accustomed in January. Was all of this inevitable? Is it now? It is always possible to insist that we should seek another way, a path of shared work, shared purpose, and shared wealth as our great grandparents did long time ago. But this is naive. All the problems, alienation, exploitation, addiction, despair, I would add open borders, immigration, self-hate, anti-white self-hatred, exacerbated during the lockdown, have been long been hiding in plain sight. A political system that during what we told ourselves were ordinary times cannot solve the simplest of challenges, passing a federal budget in a timely manner, much less address what the president once referred to as American carnage, will not rise to the present occasion. Instead, Americans will model on looking after ourselves and our families and friends as best as we can, helpless in the face of transformation that we will barely notice. Anyway, he goes on there, but it's a pretty interesting piece. He says, I hope I'm wrong about the dark years ahead of us. It's some of these predictions, right? It doesn't really go into much on food shortage and these kinds of ideas as well, but that's something that's weaved into this as well, right? Will some of these jobs even come back? You know, what's going to happen? The unemployment. So it's pretty nutty stuff, to be honest. All right, let me do a couple of these real quick here before we move on. Not going to be too long-winded. I realize I have too many articles, too many things to go through, but we'll get to some of them more here before we wrap up. I wanted to, let's do this. Let's do a little bit of a lighthearted thing. I can squeeze this in here in between. Let's talk about let's watch a video, I should say. And it was Brian Young reminded me, I was watching High Impact Vlogs, so shout out to him. It was just good work. He had a video where he replayed this, and I thought we could take a look at this too. It's a good It's a good clip. It's George Carlin on germs and the immune system and stuff. And it's I mean, the essence is that, yeah, this is just humor and kind of stuff. But there's a serious message weaved into what he's talking about here. And it's how soft and dependent we have become, how fragile all our systems is, and we think patting everything and spraying everything down and disinfecting everything and everything is dangerous kind of attitudes, right? That this will create a weaker individual. It will create individuals with weaker immune system. It will create weaker populations. This is not the right way to go, right? We know why our governments do it. We know why, you know, why they advocate for dependency, because it turns out into easily controllable, dependent, little cheap, essentially, right? But anyway, if you're maybe young enough so you haven't seen this before, or just a little flashback to some Carlin stuff, let's check this out, because it's some good things racing here.
It's just one more way of reducing your liberty and reminding you that they can fuck with you anytime they want, as long as you put up with it. As long as you put up with it. Which means, of course, anytime they want. Because that's what Americans do now. They're always willing to trade away a little of their freedom in exchange for the feeling, the illusion of security. What we have now is a completely neurotic population obsessed with security and safety and crime and drugs and cleanliness and hygiene and germs. There's another thing, germs. Where did this sudden fear of germs come from? In this country, have you noticed this? The media constantly running stories about all the latest infections, salmonella, E. coli, hantavirus, bird flu, and Americans they panic easily, so now everybody's running around scrubbing this and spraying that and overcooking their food and repeatedly washing their hands, trying to avoid all contact with germs. It's ridiculous, and it goes to ridiculous lengths. In prisons, before they give you a lethal injection, they swab your arm with alcohol. It's true. It's true. It's true. Well, they don't want you to get an infection. And you can see their point. Wouldn't want some guy to go to hell and be sick. It would take a lot of the sportsmanship out of the whole execution. Fear of germs. Why, these fucking pussies. You can't even get a decent hamburger anymore. They cook the shit out of everything now because everybody's afraid of food poisoning. Hey, where's your sense of adventure? Take a fucking chance, will you? You know how many people die in this country from food poisoning every year? 9,000. That's all. It's a minor risk. Take a fucking chance, bunch of goddamn pussies. Besides, what do you think you have an immune system for? It's for killing germs. But it needs practice. It needs germs to practice on. So listen. If you kill all the germs around you and live a completely sterile life, then when germs do come along, you're not going to be prepared. And never mind ordinary germs. What are you going to do when some super virus comes along that turns your vital organs into liquid shit? I'll tell you what you're going to do. You're going to get sick, you're going to die, and you're going to deserve it because you're fucking weak and you got a fucking weak immune system. Now, God damn it. Hey. All right. Let me tell you a true story about immunization, okay? When I was a little boy in New York City in the 1940s, we swam in the Hudson River, and it was filled with raw sewage, okay? We swam in raw sewage. You know, to cool off. And at that time, the big fear was polio. Thousands of kids died from polio every year. But you know something? In my neighborhood, no one ever got polio. No one, ever. You know why? Because we swam in raw sewage. It strengthened our immune systems. The polio never had a prayer. We were tempered in raw shit. So personally, I never take any special precautions against germs. I don't shy away from people who sneeze and cough. I don't wipe off the telephone. I don't cover the toilet seat. And if I drop food on the floor, I pick it up and eat it. I eat it. Yes, I do. Even if I'm at a sidewalk cafe in Calcutta, the poor section, on New Year's morning during a soccer riot. And you know something? In spite of all that so-called risky behavior, I never get infections. I don't get them. I don't get colds. I don't get flu. I don't get headaches. I don't get upset stomachs. And I, you know why? Because I got a good, strong immune system, and it gets a lot of practice. My immune system is equipped with the biological equivalent of fully automatic military assault rifles with night vision and laser scopes. And we have recently acquired phosphorus grenades, cluster bombs, and anti-personnel fragmentation mines. So, when my white blood cells are on patrol, reconnoitering my bloodstream, seeking out strangers and other undesirables, if they see any suspicious-looking germs of any kind, they don't fuck around. They whip out the weapons, they wax the motherfucker, and deposit the unlucky fellow directly into my colon. Into my colon. There's no nonsense. There's no Miranda warning. There's none of that three strikes and you're out shit. First defense, bam, into the colon you go. And speaking of my colon, I want you to know I don't automatically wash my hands every time I go to the bathroom, okay? Can you deal with that? Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. You know when I wash my hands? When I shit on them. That's the only time. That's the only... And you know how often that happens? Tops, tops, 2-3 times a week. Tops, tops. Maybe a little more frequently over the holidays, you know what I mean? And I'll tell you something else, my well-scrubbed friends. You don't always need a shower every day. Did you know that? It's overkill. Unless you work out or work outdoors or for some reason come in intimate contact with huge amounts of filth and garbage every day, you don't always need a shower. All you really need to do is to wash the four key areas. Armpits, asshole, crotch, and teeth. Got that? Armpits, asshole, crotch, and teeth. In fact, you can save yourself a whole lot of time if you simply use the same brush on all four areas.
All right, there you go. Fun stuff. George Collin. Do you guys remember him? Maybe some of you haven't seen it at least. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, that's. I mean, it's good to practice hygiene, right? But it's true. There is such a thing as excess, overkill. And the question is, I mean, I remember about the allergy issue. The allergy issue was a lot of kids that, you know, they were came from homes that were like incessantly, you know, cleaning and scrubbing. And I know it's the chemical thing too. If you use certain type of cleaners and stuff, that you know, you get chemical sensitivity, you can get weird shit from it. But it's just, I mean, kids are not even out anymore with their hands in the dirt. And, you know, there was a vaccine. I remember this is years ago. France had developed some vaccine, which was meant to give kids the positive, essentially minerals and stuff that comes from you having literally your hands in the soil and you know, being in the field where you're out helping your parents when they farm or something, or just being a kid rolling around in the dirt, which we do, right? Was a vaccine to replace that, like that function, right? Because kids are staying so much inside, they're in front of the TV all the time, everything is clean and stuff, and then they go outside and they fall ill. They can't take care of it, right? All right, anyway, let's move on here a little bit. I have a couple of more things I want to get through here. China seizes control of PPE factory, sparking fear of another coronavirus wave. Now, there is something to this idea that they're working in lockstep, right? The Chinese government... Bill Gates, the John Hopkins University, it's all kind of an internal little, you know, click here in terms of like how to nudge the countries around the world and the reaction and stuff like that. I understand why stories like this would kind of help to spark more fear or say, oh my God, you know, China is doing XYZ, which means that this will explain why we're going to get a second wave a little bit later. I just saw this article earlier today. I wanted to show you guys that China's Communist Party is again seizing factory lines, churning out the world's supply of medical safety gear. Sparking fears, the country is preparing for a second wave of coronavirus, American traders in China told The Post. Not sure if there will be any consequences of that or not. Huffington Post, real quick mention here. It's just amazing, right? Huffington Post, far left, just nutty, like a pro-Antifa outlet. They've written about Red Ice many times. All the lies, the disgusting, just defamation that these people write and get away with. It's unbelievable, right? These people are insane. they're monitoring people now that go out of line, that go off script, right? So it's why people are wondering why, like, so many celebrities and actors and movie stars are, you know, managed and in on things, or they've been compromised in some kind of ways. Because if you have a big voice and if you're an influencer, which is what they're talking about right here, if you influence people, if you're an influencer and you're not part of the club, you can go off script and say some really bad things, according to their logic, which could take people down the wrong path. So here's Huffington Post kind of snap people back in place, punishing people, shaming them for helping to spread conspiracy theories surrounding COVID-19. What they mean is different views, a different take, someone who has a different take on what's going on. Well, they're trying to outlaw that. We covered with David Icke, right? In the UK right now, they're trying to outlaw, make it illegal for you to talk about a different take on the coronavirus. You have to have official government policy or you're crazy. So anyway, they go through a couple of people here. Never heard of these people. Kim Cohen's Instagram page chronicles her bikini-clad adventures around the sea. That's great, and that's all fine. But then now, all of a sudden, and she has we're always worried about that. She has 100,000 followers, and then all of a sudden, the 34-year-old abruptly pivoted from sharing filtered beach selfies to blasting out. Look at the wording here: terrifying coronavirus conspiracy theories. Just to stay to the degenerate bikini pics, Kim Cohen. In lieu of her typical brand-sponsored posts, Cohen has spent the past 2 months railing against supposed collusion between the media and a cabal of deep state actors, right? So they don't like when these people go off script. This is one of the reasons why they need to control social media, censor everything that they don't like, right? There's a couple of other ones here. Anna Woods, a 30-year-old, another Instagram influencer with just over 100,000 followers, whom she called her love beams. I mean, these people, don't get me wrong, they're dumb and cheesy, right? But they probably encounter some material. They started questioning. They're like, wait a minute, what's going on here? What are we doing? Is this sound, whatever? And then they use the platform that they have built, that they have done. Just stick to posting your bikini pics and you'll be all good. We're not going to complain on you then. But now all of a sudden they go off script. So I don't want to dwell on this, but this is typical Huffington Post, right? And again, sure, it could be dumb. I haven't gone through all their stuff. I don't know what they're posting, right? But it's this idea, this elitist idea that it's only them who should be able to spread information regarding something. Again, after they've been so wrong, right? Rebecca Pfeiffer, 37-year-old mother of three with 104,000 Instagram followers. Same thing there. Went off script. Said something dangerous. She's killing people. It literally will kill you. Anti-vaccine stuff, right? Nope, not allowed. This is what we have to look forward to. You toe the official line, or you will be kicked off. You'll be reprimanded, censored, banned. Soon it will go after websites. Just anybody, anywhere on the internet. Google bans Podcast Addict app after 9 years for letting users play podcasts that reference COVID-19. Here we go. This is the stuff that's coming, right? This is what Apple has done with Telegram channels, right? You subscribe to Telegram channel, but because you got the Telegram app through the App Store, Apple can now go in and circumvent that and say, this channel on this app is not approved, so we have banned it for you. Google says it needs to be authorized by official government entities or public health organizations. Wow. If you're One of the most popular podcast players on the Google Play Store, Podcast Addict, has been suspended on the grounds that some of the and it's always this shifting blame over to a bigger, larger entity, like the payment gateway or the bank, or so, you know what I mean? It's always that. Instead of then, not that that's right, but I'm saying that instead of at least then saying, well, this podcast directly, that's what's not allowed, and take that down. They're doing this punitive, broad scope measure where they attack the infrastructure, if you will, to take the whole thing down, to scare other companies into submission. Where they say, "Holy shit, they took down the whole thing." Well, okay, well then we have to become the censoring police, right? They shift blame over on them. Now all these podcast apps or whatever that's producing things in the App Store, they have to start policing content now, or risk losing their ability to be on the App Store. And these people, between Google Play Store and the Apple App Store, it's a duopoly. It's the only thing that exists. There are no other ways for us to reach out. Just unbelievable. Disgusting. Disgusting. All right, let me do a couple more of your DLive chats here. And Mary Arian sends a diamond. It says, hail Red Ice. Hail the Acer. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's kind of you. D Chippa, I guess it is. Donates a diamond. Sends a diamond. Says, love the show and appreciate all your hard work. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Silosopher hands out a sub to D Chippa as well. Thank you for that. Appreciate it. Also, Proud and Frank Denier hands one out to Tina Baker too. Appreciate that. Neo DeLorean sends a diamond and says, if they are banning for COVID, what is next? That's the thing. What is next? And I mean, shouldn't be banning for anything. Shouldn't be banning for a single offensive thing or something that someone thinks is wrong or whatever. But that's what we have to question. What is next? Because this thing never ends. It never ceases. They just take the new opportunity of banning the next thing, whatever irritates them at that moment. Eventually, you'll have nothing left, right? That's why we have to advocate for free speech. It's really just very, very simple. I know people are trying to complicate the matter or say that, well, we're not for, you know, it's like, don't break the law. Don't have, like, you know, call to violence or, you know, pedo stuff or, you know, just obviously not. Like, get away all that shit. But then everything else, nothing that's hurting people or, you know, it's fine. Whatever it is, whatever opinions it is, it's not, words doesn't hurt people, right? Their emotions don't count. All right. Anyway, a couple of these real quick. I want to dive into a bit of a science segment here, I guess. The solar minimum is upon us, right? And that's one of the reasons, too. While interesting, and there's people have watched this, the cycles, right? The cycles of solar minimums with pandemics. Kind of makes sense, right? It's cooler climate. There's more harsher winters and stuff like that. That there is a cycle to that, those are interacting, if you will, right? But I saw this one, it's a New York Post again, it's kind of dumb, but the sun has entered a lockdown, which is just really dumb, but it's a way for them to convey it to the masses that it's a solar minimum. Less activity on the sun, fewer sunspots, that kind of stuff. But they're saying, which could cause freezing weather and famine. Our sun has gone into lockdown, which could cause freezing weather, earthquakes, and famine, scientists say. The sun is currently in a period of a solar minimum. I mean, activity on its surface has fallen dramatically. Experts believe that we're about to enter the deepest period of sunshine recession ever recorded as sunspots have virtually disappeared. This is a big problem here. Big problem. Astronomer Dr. Tony Phillips said solar minimum is underway, and it's a deep one. Sunspots counts suggest it could be one of the deepest of the past century. The sun's magnetic field has become weak, allowing extra cosmic rays into the solar system. Excess cosmic rays pose a health hazard to astronauts and polar air travelers, affecting the electrochemistry of Earth's upper atmosphere, and may help to trigger lightning. NASA scientists fear it could be a repeat of the Dalton minimum, which appeared between 1790 and 1830, leading to periods of brutal cold, crop loss, famine, and powerful volcanic eruptions. Temperatures plummeted by 2 degrees Celsius, 3.6 Fahrenheit, over 20 years, devastating the world's food production. And think about it too, right? We've many on the kind of who are skeptical about the anthropogenic global warming accusations of climate change, that is human activity and stuff like that, have, of course, made the connections to the sun. That this is where the real oomph lies. It's the sun's activity which drives everything, right? It's a massive, massive ball of energy. Whatever it does, we're going to be affected by that, right? That's what we should look at. But they had this report where they argued 0.5%. The recent report is why we're going to all die in 12 years, essentially. Now we're talking 2 degrees, right? Do they talk that much about that? No, they don't. 2 degrees, that's massively different than 0.5. So we'll see, you know, how this plays out here. But anyway, they talk about some of the history here. On April 10th, 1815, the second largest volcanic eruption in 2,000 years happened at Mount Tambora in Indonesia, killing at least 71,000 people. It also led to a so-called year without a summer in 1816, also nicknamed 1800 and frozen to death. When there was snow in July. So far this year, the sun has been blank with no sunspots 76% of the time, a rate surpassed only once before in the space age last year when it was 77% blank. So yeah, that's to make matters worse, right? We're talking about food shortages. We're talking about it's, I don't know, it's very interesting. It's almost like these things just lock into each other. It's almost like it was intentional. All right, let me do a couple of these. I saw a couple of here. Real quick, D-Chip, I think it is again. Yeah, since the dominance says government sells out people, ask why don't you trust us? Well, exactly. You got to trust us now. Whatever we say, you know, we always want your best, right? I've made the argument many times with the replacement agenda that goes that's going on right now too. That it's like these are the governments that turn their back on their people. Most of the time, they don't care about them. They don't take their concerns into account. They, in fact, in many of Western countries at least, are trying to replace their own population, running these programs, right? And then now all of a sudden they're going to take care of us. Now they're looking out for us. Now they're going to make sure that everything is good and we go back to normal so they can start replacing us again. It's bullshit. Thank you, D-Chip. I appreciate that. A Mary Arian sends a Domino says, host Kiss and Poseidon after stream. Are they going live at after? Yeah, usually I'm bad at that because I don't check back in on DLive. I start processing it again. But I'll check out after I've gone off and see who's live and see if there's anybody I can host. Heavy Bubble sends a diamond and says big Viking balls talking about grand solar minimum. Yeah, well, it's a reality. But we didn't really get a chance to dive into that that much when we had Ice Age Farmer here, which is one thing I wanted to do. But it's a very important thing, and we need to continue to cover that. Just staying on this line of some of the science stuff here a little bit, I saw this one. Make sure that this doesn't autoplay here. NASA scientists detect parallel universe next to us where time runs backwards. With some experiments in the Antarctic, that's revealed evidence of a universe born in the same Big Bang as ours, but with rules of physics that are completely the opposite. Like, okay, interesting. NASA scientists have detected evidence of a parallel universe right next to ours where all the rules of physics seems to be operating in reverse. Fans of sci-fi and comics books have known about parallel universes since the early 60s. But while physicists have been debating since 1952 whether we actually live in a multiverse, when quantum science pioneer Erwin Schrödinger gave a lecture that he himself admitted might seem lunatic, there's been little evidence so far of dimensions beyond our own. But now a cosmic ray detection experiment has found particles that just could be from outside our universe. Interesting. NASA's Antarctic Impulsive Transient Antenna, ANITA, uses a giant balloon to haul delicate electronic antennas high into the cold air above above Antarctica, where there's little to no radio noise to distort its findings. There's a constant wind of high-energy particles coming from outer space, some of which are a million times more powerful than anything we can generate ourselves. Low-energy particles, neutrinos, can pass completely through the Earth, barely interacting with the substance of our planet at all. But high-energy objects are stopped by the reassuringly solid matter of the Earth. That means that high-energy particles can only be detected coming down from outer space. To detect a heavier particle, a tau neutrino, coming up out of the Earth would imply that these particles are actually traveling backwards in time. Interesting. And that is exactly why ANITA, and that is exactly what the ANITA scientists have seen, they claim. So some B-roll from this here too, by the way. Here's the high altitude, I guess I send this thing up in a balloon, right, to check out, I guess, tau neutrinos then coming up from the upside. Pretty trippy stuff. Anyway, thought it'd be fun talking about something different for a little bit here. All right, boys and girls. We're going to wrap up here in just a little bit. Let me see what else we should cover. I had some stuff about the moderator stuff. That could actually have been pretty interesting. Let me just review here because we're not going to be able to go through it all. Maybe we can do the moderator stuff. There was a crazy... It's ADL again. That's one of the reasons why it's interesting to talk about this too. Because ADL actually has a finger in this. There was a couple of videos that came out regarding a completely insane, nutty Twitch moderator, some council member or something like that. And then it came out, it's interlocking with this idea that the ADL has gone after Steam, right? The video game producer, the company who are, well, I guess they don't produce their own. I guess they just host them, right? The platform where you can download games and stuff like that. Because Steam and these gamers are white supremacists. That's the take, right? So ADL has ensured that they have now people on the inside that are moderating things, and that's what this person is. And if you haven't seen it before, just check this out. This is Memology 101 covering this. They do a good job summarizing this here. So let's just take a look at this, guys.
Voice chat is a competitive advantage. Not using voice chat is a competitive disadvantage.
Yikes.
If you use voice chat, you're revealing your linguistic profile, your voice, which can open you up to being harassed or considered less of a good player because there are systemic issues with our society and how people treat non-standard voices.
I think it's a, what do they call them again? An other kin, or is it an animal kin, or I forget what the term is for these people. But anyway, let's. I'm very confused. Let's continue.
No. Okay, but my free speech, and my closing argument, my free speech. This is my house. I can ban you for whatever reason I want. You have no free speech here.
That's right. This is the United States of Phil. I am the supreme being. I make the rules, and what I say goes. This is not a place for you to stand on your soapbox and complain about censorship and freedom of speech, because the bottom line is you don't have freedom of speech. This is my land.
I decide. And just now, Steph, which is this person, got caught power tripping on stream.
But I'm hanging in there, and I'm not going anywhere. I have power. They can't take it away from me. And honestly, you know, there are some people that should be afraid of me, and that they are, because I represent moderation and diversity and
moderation and diversity.
Come for hurtful, harmful people. If you're a really shitty person, I'm gonna stand up against you. Period. Oh, and Twitch is endorsing me to do that. So.
We got ourselves a desperate nut job in a leadership position. So somehow, I'm never on Twitch or whatever, but obviously, you know, gamers and stuff are. These are the kinds of people that are deciding what goes and doesn't go on the platform, right? All right. So the first video ends there, and then there's a second one follow up to this too. The Twitch drama keeps get even crazier. It turns out that animal kin, is that what you call them? Animal kin, who called gamers white supremacists, has a connection to the ADL. ADL last month, funny enough, also published an article stating that Valve gives a voice to white supremacists. I think it was Steam. Or is it Steam the same as Valve? Maybe they are. So here's the person, right? Steph Lore? Steph Ferociously Steph Lore is a professional community leader and video game live streamer on the service Twitch.tv, ADL writes here. For the past 3 years, Twitch is a platform for live interactive media, emphasizing immediate discourse between viewers and broadcasters. Steph is passionate about using this connection for good, building mutually beneficial bonds and relationships on a medium unusually used exclusively for entertainment. She is transgender and an advocate, it goes on to say that, right? But here's the stuff. We talked about this in one of the Weekend Warrior shows. ADL says, Steam, the largest and most important online store for PC gamers, offers white supremacists a new outlet for their hateful rhetoric and calls for violence. More on Steam's role as a host for this dangerous ideology in our latest report, right? And a lot of people covered this, which of course was good, right? But now it means that they have a finger in putting people in place in these kinds of positions to dictate, to control, to make sure that, again, we talked about it before, but nothing can go off script, right? It needs to be this concurrent view. Everybody that has I guess, gets a following on Twitch or something that live streams video games and they're not just explicitly left-wing or something, they need to be moderated, need to be controlled, they need to be roped in. And you have organizations such as the ADL with a finger in this mess, in this pie, right? And here's a follow-up here from Memology about the ADL stuff too.
Now this shocks me.
Yep, not same ADL. Yeah, here's the, let me read that again, podcast audience, mind if I follow this, 100% there's some text here talking about this too, but here's an ADL, what was it called, a public director, was that what they wrote, an assistant director at the ADL, that's publicly supporting Steph, right, Daniel Kelly, congrats to Ferociously S, which is the Steph person, right, for being part of Twitch's new Safety Advisory Council, key perspectives to include from the Twitch community, academia, and civil society, TechCrunch, blah, blah, blah. Meaning that they know who they're putting in place, right? Very interesting. Very interesting. Thank the ADL for not being able to speak. Not even on Twitch now. It says Steph's relation with the ADL is nothing new. It goes back at least 2 years. Oh, look at that. Yeah, so gamers, they're coming for you. Yeah, a tweet showing how this person's saying when it's happened. Honored to announce that it'll be on a panelist at one of the ADL conferences there, too. Oh. No Pepe or Re emotions. So it's like this. Ah, yeah. So someone tried to post it. A reference to ADL's website, right? Stefan Chat Steph's chat redirects you when you post, I guess, on the Discord or something. To the ADL's profile on Pepe and other white supremacist memes, right? This is how they're trying to control it. It's amazing. I love how an entity that hates gamers has managed to infiltrate gaming. Well, yeah, of course. They got to control them. All right. So you get the idea. Oh, is it more here?
2, 3.
pretty much. All right. Holy shit. So, guys, I actually had a little bit more on this one too, but I think we'll round up there. A little bit too much to go into now, but inside the traumatic life of a Facebook moderator would have weaved beautifully into that. Recently, Facebook announced that they're giving $1,000 to people that were part of Cognizant, the company that moderated a lot of the Facebook posts. They claimed it gave them PTSD and that they became conspiracy theorist trolls. They started believing 9/11, conspiracies and stuff, and now that they're all screwed up in the head, they claim. So they're trying to seek to get, a lot of free money. But then this video was interesting from The Verge. They have two of these where they're talking with some of these moderators. And then you're just like, oh, okay, these are the people that get PTSD from encountering a 9/11 conspiracy theory. That's why I wanted to watch it. Maybe we'll do it next time. It's still a bit too much to go into now. It's like a 10-minute video. But it's pretty hilarious, actually, when you get into it. Like, I was hurt by 9/11 conspiracy memes. Now I need $1,000. Actually, they paid as high as, I think, $40,000 if they could prove that they had other physical, conditions consequences, I guess, from moderating Facebook. It's pretty hilarious, actually. But all right, guys, thank you so much for joining us here. We're going to start wrapping up. Check out the David Icke interview, of course. Tomorrow, We have more videos coming out. Lana has a number of short ones. Try to finalize those. Might or might not have an interview tomorrow. Depends on the, waiting for a booking to come back and see if we can do that or not. Otherwise, we have shorter videos. And then, of course, Friday, Flashback Friday, as usual, on Fridays. What am I doing here? Let me pull this up. Yeah, on Fridays, 5 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Central European time. And then we have, of course, Weekend Warrior on Sundays after that. Have some interesting interview proposals lined up as well. So keep an eye on that. Some of that is coming up here. But yeah, guys, let's start wrapping up right there. I do appreciate you joining us today. Going to open the DLive stuff. Actually, there's a couple more that came in there. Let me take those real quick. And then we'll wrap up here. Where are we here? I don't want to lose my place. I think in Minnesota, Matt, I think it is. Since they're down, it says the cold drives out of the riffraff. Bring it on. The cold drives out the riffraff. Bring it on, it should say. Yeah, definitely. I agree. Thank you for that. Draconian Gimp of Death, a diamond. Specific organisms thrive at specific frequencies. I do believe that's true, right? So it's not good to bathe in frequencies which you're not supposed to, which your body hasn't developed being in, right? Cool Beans sends a diamond. It says, Diamond Time. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Draconian Gimp of Death again. A diamond. It says, in mycology, which I guess is fungi science, right? Mycology. They have a term, morphing cultures. Interesting. And it sends another diamond. It says, their narrative pixelating into a puddle of of sick. I guess, is that related to the ADL, the gaming stuff? Anyway, thank you, Draconian Gimp of Death. Appreciate that. A Mary Arian sends a diamond. It says, don't forget to host Kiz or Poseidon. Yeah, look into that after I close off the stream. Thank you. Island Tipper donates a diamond. It says, great show. Well, thank you so much. Draconian Gimp of Death again. Diamond. Thank you for influencing us with your courage. Well, thank you. Don't know if it's courage. It just... God, holy hell. We got to do something about this, guys. Opening the chest. Right there, so heads up, your lemons are coming up your way. Let me just double check, make sure there's nothing on the other end. But yeah, if we don't do it, who will, right? Netlux TBSE sent five here and says, hey, Henrik, keep up the great work. Wanted to suggest a guest for a show. Sean Atwood, fantastic researcher on Epstein, more than anyone I've seen. Definitely get him on. Interesting. Thank you, Netlux. I appreciate that. Did have a thing on Epstein. We'll have to take that on Friday. All right, guys, I think that's it. I think we'll wrap up right there. Want to make sure we have everything going out. Congratulations to Proud Am Frank Denier, number one over on DLive. Number two, Mr. Wright. Number three, Mr. Noseberg. All of those three guys, of course, are great supporters. Appreciate that very much. Sniper Bear Mitage, I think it is. Number four, and Netlux. Number five. Thank you, Netlux. Appreciate that. All right, boys and girls. We'll see you next time. Take care. Stay safe. Friday is coming up next, of course. Make sure you check it out then. We have, of course, one show coming up or a shorter video probably tomorrow, Thursday, if we can finalize that. See you later, guys. Take care. Love you. Now, if you're new here, just want to alert you to Weekend Warrior, our exclusive show that we do at redicemembers.com each weekend. News roundup show. We talk about some of the current events, the most important stories. We have a good laugh as well. Laugh at some of the cultural Marxist absurdities. Check it out if you haven't already. An exclusive show. People love it. They tune in each weekend. They don't miss a single show. It's well produced. There really isn't anything like it on the anti-globalist movement, whatever you want to call it. So thank you so much for watching. But again, if you want more, redicemembers.com, Weekend Warrior. Check it out.